Monster Man, Special Episode, Exquisite Corpses.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon backers, and in particular, a Patreon backer, Steen Struppian. If you'd like to be like Steen Struppian and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is all about the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition and using religion and mythology in your fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much, Steen Struppian. And I hope that you enjoy this episode. Steen Struppian asked me to talk about something called an exquisite corpse, and I think, you know, a lot of people may know what that is, but we'd better start off with an explanation. Exquisite Corpse is a game. I encountered it as an art game, although you can do it in writing as well. In fact, it's the writing version of the game that was where its name comes from. But Exquisite Corpse is a game where, you probably know it, you take a piece of paper and you fold it into however many parts, right? So fold it in thirds, fold it in quarters, such that you can draw part of a picture, usually of a character, on one fold and then turn it so that the, you know, only a little bit sticks off the bottom, and then the next person has to draw the next part of it without seeing the first part, and then they fold it, and then the third person has to draw, and so on and so forth. Because each artist doesn't know what the previous parts of the image look like, you wind up with these weird composite creatures or characters, and they have kind of a monstrous appearance, which is what ties them in to our monster idea. Now, I used to play this game with my brother when we were kids, you know, just like with my friends. I don't know where I heard it called Exquisite Corpse, but it must have been at quite a young age, because it's something that I remember my whole life that we would play this game. I used to be much more artistic when I was a kid, kind of got out of the habit. What I did not know about it, and what I only learned when I started to look it up from Steen Struppian's question, is that the Exquisite Corpse originated as like a surrealist art exercise. So if you look at the exquisite corpses that are in the Museum of Modern Art, for example, there are exquisite corpses that have sections by like Miro or Man Ray or André Breton. Now, I'm not much of a surrealism guy, but I have been listening to the segments about them over on Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff. So it was surprising to me to see that these kind of, that it was surprising to me that this originated, you know, with like artists. It all seemed to me to be kind of a doodling game. On the other hand, you know, maybe it is a doodling game, a folk thing that got turned into this, you know, quote-unquote exquisite corpse when proper arty art type started doing it. After all, the creatures created using exquisite corpses have ties into types of monsters that we've talked about before, including in Steen Struppian's last patron episode, which was the one about the Zachromaster. Remember the Zachromaster? The Zachromaster was that Bronze Age seal maker who produced images of like combined animal parts in ways that you wouldn't expect. This ties in to some of the ideas that I've talked about that I took from David Wengrow's book, in which he talks about the way that early representations of hybrid monsters are tied into the way that people began seeing animals and other things as collections of separable qualities rather than like holistic individuals. Animals like the chimera, the griffin, Pegasus, whatever, the sphinx, the manticore, and what have you, are based on the combination of different animal features into a single new being that nonetheless carries with it the meaning of all of those existing features. This is interesting. That idea of meaning is an interesting one, and we're going to return to it in a moment. I think that there are a couple of ways that you can use this concept in a game. The first and simplest is to simply use the Exquisite Corpse method to create a monster that you will then use, you know, more or less as a monster with no reference to the fact that that's how it originated. So, as I was looking through the exquisite corpses that are on the Museum of Modern Art website, I was struck by one that was created by Jake and Dinos Chapman, who I'm sure we've discussed some of the Chapman brothers' work on this show before. Maybe not, but I feel like there's a connection between them and some forms of gaming art. Now, this monster, the head is almost sort of like exploded at like an exploded diagram. So it has kind of externalized eyes. It almost looks as though the head is exploding, although maybe better to say kind of everting. It has a sort of wiggly tentacle-like arms. It's got a sort of visible looking heart in the center of its chest, or a visible looking something. Maybe it's meant to be a hole or like the yolk of an egg or something like that. Hairy legs and feet that seem to be covered with some kind of root-like protrusions, and almost like faces on its feet. But the whole thing has an appearance of like organs that have been externalized. And what's interesting here is that that shows up in the drawing of both artists. You know, you can tell that it's done by different people. Like the line is different, the darkness and the weight of the line. But they both kind of have this theme of inside-outness. At the bottom, it says a Picassonoma, which I take to mean something like a teratoma, right? Like that. Imagine if there was a physical being that had cubism, like a disease. So here, I think we have something that, with relatively little effort, we can turn into a kind of horror fantasy monster. This idea of something that has been, you know, turned inside out, whose insides are now on its outsides. And, you know, maybe it can, you know, if we go with this idea of like that it's exploding almost, it could shower you with sharp fragments of bone. It could be infectious. It could transmit the Picassonoma to you so that you would begin to evert. We could tie it into the thematic idea of inside out. So like maybe it's not so much that it causes you to literally turn inside out, but that it causes you to reveal secrets or, you know, bear your feelings in a way, right? Turn your insides outward, wear your heart on your sleeve, as it were. You know, maybe being inside out means that it's sort of vulnerable points are on the outside, which, you know, could make it easier to defeat. I think it just definitely, like, could be the result of some kind of curse, or could have passed through some kind of dimensional effect. Is there a Rudy Rucker novel where a guy goes into like the fourth dimension and comes back, but like rotated around the other way so he can't digest some kinds of food because of the way the molecules connect to each other? I'm not a scientist, but I seem to recall that. Anyway, so I feel like there's a lot at play here. With some of the other ones, I feel like the more disjointed the parts are, the harder it is to fit a monster into this first category. Though the second is coming up. One area where I think you can really see this happening is in the world of miniatures gaming. Now, you know me, I like miniatures. I collect and paint and convert and mess with miniatures. And I'm very focused on the idea. Like, when I am doing it the way that I like it, like, miniature painting is a form of folk art. You know, maybe it's fine art that I'm bad at, but to me, the making of things from kind of household objects or found objects, the do-it-yourself attitude, that doesn't preclude technical skill, but hopefully, at least for me, hopefully it doesn't require it, you know, is very compelling to me. And so it was interesting to me to see these events on YouTube. There are lots and lots of wonderful miniature making and painting channels on YouTube, and there was a shared event between a load of them. In fact, I think there have been two now, called the Monster Bash. And this was where people had to build and paint monsters that were designed according to a kind of cut-up mechanic. And I think that, you know, the cut-up, the taking kind of random elements and combining them in a way that, I guess to be a cut-up, you'd have to be doing that to an existing text. This is not that. But they're drawing elements from a deck of monster cards and then combining them to make new monsters, which they then have to build and paint. If you want to go check that out, so look for the YouTube channels. If you just search Monster Bash, you'll find some of them. But it was on a ton of them. Miscast did it, Scratch Bashing, Miniature Hobbyist, Berserker Works, I think, participated. Lila Mev was in it. Eric's Hobby Workshop, Rack Rex, Frankie Decrafter, Nerdcraft HQ. I mean, there were a load. Like, I think that's not even all of them. And because of the physical nature of the kind of exquisite corpse or random generation method, I think that translates well into a physical nature of the monster, right? Which is why it's so apparently commonplace in model making. Speaking of which, you can also see this in like the random monster generation tables. They're such an important part of kind of 80s and early 90s Games Workshop. So if you think about like Realms of Chaos, there's a lot of random monster generation. And again, I think it has some of the same elements as Exquisite Corpse, but you're not playing the game with another person. It's just a mechanic. And I think that is an important difference. You get this in Monster Manual 2 as well, right? The Hordlings in Monster Manual 2 are an example of this kind of mechanic. Now, I know that I keep saying that it's nearly time to do another Monster Man contest, or as I've decided to call it, a Monster Man Monster Jam, but it's the time. You know, I loved doing the first Monster Man contest and the second one. Obviously, we didn't, you know, the second one wasn't as heavily promoted, didn't get as many entrants or as much attention, but I think another Monster Man Monster Jam would be fantastic, and maybe something like this would be a good way to start it. I know that a lot of people weren't as excited about the first Monster Man contest because the miniatures component of it, not everyone who listens to this show is as into that as I am. It's just the amount of time that it takes to do it. I have a lovely set of miniatures from Eureka Miniatures that are based on kind of like Hieronymus Bosch-y sort of creatures. And they almost have that Exquisite Corpse quality where the different parts of them are in different... They almost look like they've been put together by different people. Like one of them is a log of wood with tentacles coming out of it and like chicken feet. So, method one. We are using an Exquisite Corpse idea to generate a monster which in the game is merely another type of hybrid monster, a la a chimera, a griffin, a periton, you know, hippogriff, whatever. Option number two, the Exquisite Corpsing or the recombining is happening in game. This is more like the case with the Realms of Chaos, right? The chaotic nature of the creatures is reflected in their chaotic physical appearance. And in this instance, the hybridization is used not to communicate the qualities of the monster, but its lack of qualities. Let me compare two chimera monsters for this purpose, right? So when you look at a griffin, you're meant to understand an image of power and speed, right? We have a lion, the most powerful, dangerous thing on the ground, and we have an eagle, the most powerful, dangerous thing in the air. Same with the hippogriff, the swiftness of the horse and the swiftness of the eagle combined. But when you look at a chimera, you're meant to think this is a bunch of nonsense. You know, these things have been combined in a statement that doesn't make any sense. This is an issue of Doom Patrol and Herr Niemand and the Brotherhood of Dada are busted in the doors. I mean, you know, again, no surprise, they come out of that same interwar artistic environment as the Exquisite Corpse. But the nonsenseness of the monster is itself meant to be the point. That the existence of the chimera or the manticore is meant to be the uncanny thing, because it's a thing that shouldn't be. We can put together images, and I don't just mean like positive ones, right? Look at the griffin, you're like, ah, you know, a majestic and noble beast. You look at Medusa and you're like, oh, a horrible monster. But that image makes sense to you. Those symbols make sense to you. And your mind, this is going back to the first part, sorry. Your mind will tend to combine symbols in ways that make sense to you. So if you really want that surreal uncanniness, you have to trick yourself out of those combinations that make sense. And that's what games like Exquisite Corpse are for. Anyway, back to my main point. What if in game what is happening is that these qualities are being combined. So we've got some kind of, you know, maybe it's a Frankenstein type situation. Maybe it's a combination of qualities that some, you know, mad ancient supercomputer is just splicing DNA together. Maybe it's a, you know, a spell that's misfiring. But we have all these creatures and their elements are being combined in ways that are nonsensical. You understand why somebody would combine a lion and an eagle, but you don't understand why somebody would combine a tadpole, an owl, and an old boot. So the fact that the pieces of a monster don't match each other indicate that the creature is monstrous, but the fact that even the mismatches don't match each other between individual creatures means that all the creatures are representative of the idea that something has gone very wrong, something wrong with the nature of beings themselves. But there's a problem with this from a gameplay perspective, which is that these on-the-fly mechanics are actually slow to implement at the game table. If you're, you know, putting together a Realms of Chaos warband and you're rolling for your mutations and things, all that is happening in the planning phase when you are creating the miniature. Indeed, some of those miniatures are going to take a heck of a long time to create because you're going to get something like the left half of your body is a swarm of scorpions. That is a result you can roll, I think. Best of luck on the modeling project! But that you never have to suddenly do that in the middle of a game because it just doesn't make sense. That's not how miniatures gaming works. But in a role-playing game, you might very well have like a hordling about to kick down the door, but you haven't rolled it. You only rolled up 10 and this is the 11th one. And so you find yourself saying, you know, the door flies open and out of the tunnel, preceded by a wave of stinking mist, comes a beast with 3 legs, a vulture head. So this is fun, but it's not practical in many ways. Not practical to do on the fly, but the spontaneity is kind of part of the point of it. It might be a way to get the player characters involved, right? If we're just doing one monster at the final stage of the scenario, you could do a kind of Ghostbusters choose the form of the destroyer moment where you actually passed around the piece of paper and had all the players, you know, draw a bit of it, maybe not even knowing what it was. It could even be something that their characters are doing, right? Where you have some kind of prompt and the characters have to each draw like a section of a particular thing. I think that'd be fun. I know some players are not comfortable drawing at the game table. I ran an Over the Edge game, and in Over the Edge, drawing your character is part of the character creation process. It's in the rules. It's not just like for funsies. And it gives an example of you could draw this picture that's, you know, a circle, 2 dots, and a line for a mouth, and one of my players still refused to do it. I can't draw. Yeah, but I'm just asking you to do like a little, you know, no, I can't draw. Okay, whatever. But I think if your table are into that kind of thing, it could be a lot of fun. You can do it as a collage, I guess, if you're playing online, right? Use found images. But actually having the players create that for one monster, I think, would be a lot of fun. For a lot of monsters, again, too time-consuming. So maybe instead of an exquisite corpse per se, you could have that, like, deck of cards, or it's, like, almost like some dials, right? You want something almost like the spinning wheels on a slot machine. You could have, like, a little app. Push a button, the three little things spin and give you, you know, 3 or 4 parts of a monster. And that's kind of how the Monster Bash works. You have heads, torsos, limbs, feet, tails, wings, etc. In fact, I think that the idea of the card deck leads to point 3. And point 3 is where we start to get out of my particular comfort zone, because point 3 is about the idea of doing things with mechanics. So each part of the exquisite corpse could add not only an element of appearance, but also a mechanical element. So we would have some kind of correspondence, right? If the player draws wings, that means it can fly. If the player draws, you know, red eyes, that means it has laser vision. If the player draws claws, if the player draws quills, if the player draws other. This is actually going to come up in our next episode, but if you look at the broken ones, these monsters from Ravenloft, who are essentially like the animal people from the Island of Dr. Moreau, they all have various animal abilities. Like, so, you know, maybe if you're like a dog person, you can smell really well, or if you're an owl, you can see in the dark, or whatever. But it's all just left up to the GM's discretion, which is fine because these are relatively minor abilities. But it'd be nice if, when we learned that the snake person had a poisonous bite, we knew how difficult the poisonous bite was to deal with, right? A brief message from James from the future. Obviously, when I said poisonous bite, I meant venomous bite. You may stop being outraged. So we just have like some little table that says, draw this, get that. Possible. Again, a little complex for quick generation, but could be fun. Now, that's if you're playing a game that has comparatively structured monster stats, something like a Dungeons & Dragons. If you're playing a game that has a keyword system, you're good to go. You're aces. You can generate Hero Quest monsters using... That's the Robin Laws Hero Quest. All you need to know is that its stats are like, you know, gnashing teeth, 1 mastery, laser vision, 17, or what have you. So I think systems like that handle these types of monsters very well. So yeah, those I think are the options. I think random generation is fun, but the true nature of the exquisite corpse is that it is interactive, you know, sort of. Like the final thing is the product of 2 different people. You know, I tend to go back to the same well. I tend to draw on the same images, the same ideas. I've been talking about art, but you can apply the same logic to writing, right? The collaboration forces you to produce works that you would not otherwise produce. And then once you have done it, those works are in your mental repertoire. If I am, maybe other people operate differently, but I creatively, I know this all sounds a bit highfalutin for talking about making D&D monsters, but creatively, I think of myself as kind of a bricoleur. I go around studying history and reading books and watching cartoons and looking at people as I walk my dog and whatever, and all of those ideas just kind of go in the big swipe file of the mind and then come out at an appropriate moment. And one of the ways in which I have, I think players who only play one of my games tend to think like, oh wow, James comes up with fun and inventive stuff, and a lot of the time that's stuff that to me is kind of familiar, and expanding the boundaries of what you, your mind considers familiar, I think is one of the most valuable things that you can do if you want to run or play or create games. And collaboration is one way to do that. But there are lots of ways in which collaboration's a pain in the butt. I don't need to go into those here, but I'm sure you can all imagine them or have experience of them. And so little mini collaborations that have rules are a great way to solve this. Okay, I'm recording this final section of the episode at a slightly different time. And since it is during the day, I think you might be able to hear the maintenance workers working on my building in the background. I'm sorry about that, but it's important work, so I'm glad that they are doing it. What I wanted to do was take an example of an exquisite corpse and gamify it. And I have chosen an artwork just titled Cadavre Exquis, Exquisite Corpse, that is in the National Gallery of Scotland. And it's by the aforementioned André Breton, Yves Tanguy, if that's how you pronounce his last name, I don't know, and Jacqueline Lamba. Now, this might not be a proper exquisite corpse, since the notes on the image say that there are no fold lines on the paper, so they may actually have done this just regular collaboratively, but it does have the same quality of being quite a vertical image that's divided into different sections. It's collage rather than a drawing. So interesting. I don't know the history behind it, but I wonder if they just took it in turns to add a piece to the collage or something like that. Anyway, briefly looking at what we've got, it's a tall figure that doesn't appear to have arms, and it's the main part of its body is sort of vertical, mechanical looking column with broad shoulders made of some kind of, I don't know, machine or other. On top of that, you've got a train letting out a plume of smoke. On top of that, a bearded head with curly hair and some kind of cap. And then on top of that, a caterpillar. And then down at the bottom, you've got a pair of, they look like waders, you know, like the high-waisted trousers with the braces that go over the shoulders. And right around the midsection, it looks like a weight, like a balancing arm. But for our purposes, I'm going to think of it as a wrecking ball. And what immediately strikes me about this image is the contrast between the kind of mainly artificial or mechanical middle and lower parts of the creature and the, you know, the face on the top, and then the caterpillar on top of that. And so I think that I'm going to interpret this as being some kind of mechanical idol, right? So that the head is not like a person's head, but a sculpture. This is like a carving shaped in the form of a person's head. And maybe it's an older carving that then some later civilization has taken and mechanized, right? So like they saw this carving of one of the gods and they thought, you know, this is terrible. The god doesn't move. The god doesn't breathe out clouds of toxic smoke. We should make the god capable of doing that. You know, what if someone gets in his way? The god's going to need a wrecking ball, or, you know, kind of around the midsection to bash things out of the way. And so they've taken this whatever old statue, and maybe bit by bit, or maybe all at once, they've removed the head of it, or they've replaced like all the parts that were falling apart bit by bit until there was nothing left of the head. And it's basically like a statue borg, as though it were living parts being replaced by machine ones, but not living in the first place. But I imagine that it has a certain malign will of its own. And the fact that the smoke of the engine is going into the face's mouth, and that the face has kind of a glowering expression, I think makes me think that this is an angry god, and maybe that when it speaks, it kind of breathes out this cloud of vapor. But on the top of it is this caterpillar, and that's such an incongruous image from the rest of the piece, even though the whole piece is incongruous. But the caterpillar is particularly incongruous, that I think maybe it is an addition, you know? So maybe this caterpillar, comma giant, has chosen to like make its nest in the upper reaches of this titan. And actually the PCs maybe want to get the caterpillar, comma giant, maybe because they, you know, have to keep it safe. It's the last of its species. Or maybe because they need to ask some important questions from the wisdom of the butterfly, comma giant, that it's going to turn into. Or maybe because, you know, it's going to damage the icon, but I think that the icon is not cooperating. So there's lots of like beams and like sticky out bits on the icon that the creature that make it look like it would be fun to climb. So I think that this might almost be one of those monster dungeon kind of things, right? Where, or at least monster like landscape things where the characters have to climb up the outside of this creature, dodging its, its wrecking ball and its toxic breath so that they can get to the top and stuff the caterpillar into their bag of holding or whatever. Mechanically, I tend to kind of cheat on these things. To be 100% honest with you, that kind of statting stuff is not really where I excel. I tend to fall back on making monsters that are mechanically not that exciting, but where I, like, zhuzh the dull mechanics up with fun description and motivations and stuff. So for me, you know, my temptation would be to take one of these things and just, like, use the stats for a giant or whatever, but freak people out with the weird descriptions. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw some links to these Exquisite Corpse collections that I found in the show notes. And I encourage you to, like, let's make some monsters out of these guys. I mean, probably some of these images must be in the public domain, right? Or, you know, if you have a pal that you can play Exquisite Corpses with. Or, for that matter, if we can find, like, a good online whiteboard tool. I've been using Google Jamboard, but I don't know if it'd be right for this purpose. You know, we could do some little Exquisite Corpses, maybe over on the Patreon server. At this point, I'm just thinking out loud. When I'm thinking out loud, that means that we're coming close to the end of the episode. So, Steenstrupian, it got a bit rambly there at the end, but I hope that you enjoyed it nonetheless. Everyone else, remember that if you'd like to be like Steenstrupian and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. Or if you'd prefer to pledge at a lower level, you can do that too. There are rewards for every level. In our next episode, well, there are two next episodes. One will be the monthly bonus content that comes to Patreon subscribers at all levels. And that'll go out to, you know, everyone who subscribes from $1 up. And then at the beginning of next week, we'll have a new episode for everybody, including non-patrons. And that's going to be a return to the Monster's Manual, where we're going to look at the bird, the brain mole, the broken one, and the brownie. All of that right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.